Hello and welcome to The Media Show. I'm Brenda Power, and on today's show, Sunday Independent editor Anne Harris reflects on her past, present and future with the newspaper.
Well, I have a contract that runs till the end of 2014. All I want is to see it out and to keep working in the Sunday Independent because I love it.
And funding RTE, is the station too commercial to be a public broadcaster?
We feel that currently RTE operates with an unfettered commercial mandate.
Director General Noel Curran confronts his critics.
If RTE keeps having its public funding eroded, it won't be able to do the unique things that it does, and it will be pushed more and more down a commercial route.
But first, it seems just one in every four voices we hear on air is female. And 2 years ago, journalist Margaret E. Ward decided to tackle gender in broadcasting head on and created a network called Women on Air to encourage more women to put themselves forward and to lobby broadcasters to see diversity as a positive. I'm joined now by Carolyn Erskine, the new chair of Women on Air. Carolyn, you're a former broadcaster yourself. Why is this needed?
Irish society is in transition, and I think more and more women want to have a say in the national discourse around that, in the national conversation about the way we're going. It's a voluntary organisation, it's not for profit, and it sets out to give women, its members, confidence to come forward, confidence to go on air, and hopefully the means to upskill them. Broadcasters want new voices on air. I mean, they don't set out to block women from coming on air in particular. But as somebody who's worked in broadcasting myself over the years, I know that resources and tight time frames mean that, you know, when you're faced with putting together a programme very quickly, you tend to go for the safe option, the voices you've heard, the voices you've tried and tested.
But it's not just on air, is it? It's also in decision-making that women are scarce. And this week we lost one of the few women at the top, Claire Dignan, the managing director of RTE Radio.
Decision makers, people on air, it's all part of the democratic life of our country, of the economic life of our country. But I actually think that its time has come. There's a palpable mood for participation out there among women. And to be fair to the broadcasters, and I have to say this, RTE have been really open to this idea of bringing on women's voices. It's different between contributors on panels and people who are decision makers in a way. Obviously, programme makers will want to go for the decision maker when they're going to the nub of a story. Wouldn't it be lovely if there were more of those were women? They're not at the moment, but there are so many experts who could take part, who could be contributors on panels, which could really inform the story there.
And that's Carolyn Erskine of Women on Air, and you can find out more on their website, womenonair.ie. Now, the first 2 years of Noel Curran's term as Director General of RTE have been eventful ones for the wrong reasons. He was in the job just 3 months when the primetime Mission to Pray investigation was broadcast, and later in 2011, the so-called Tweetgate incident during a frontline debate on the presidential campaign dealt a further blow to public trust in the station. Now, at the same time, the company has been facing a funding crisis. Its deficit last year exceeded €60 million. Next week, the Minister for Communications, Pat Rabbitt, will receive a review by the regulator on RTE and its funding, which may determine its future. I'm joined by RTE's DG Noel Curran, but first, our reporter, Caitney Clary, was on the street asking people what they love and hate about RTE.
There's not none of that that interests me. Maybe the football, RTE2, that'd be about it.
The only one that really is anyway good is the Late Late Show, but it'll never beat Game On.
Look, if you look at the other stations that are on, they've all sorts of cop shows, this, that and the other. RTE don't have anything like that. Like, the only good thing to come out of RTE is love-hate.
I love the Joe Duffy, and I love Marion Finucane. And TV, I like any of the soaps, and I like prime time.
RTE Lyric is very sound. I like it a lot.
I think it's, you know, it seems to be doing its job well, so maybe the TV licence might be a bit high, but it's okay.
So it's interesting, Noel, that none of them there were talking about the problems with news and current affairs. Your colleague Kevin Backhurst was here last week saying your research is showing that public trust is being restored, that you've done the work to turn around news and current affairs, but that funding crisis obviously continues. Now, this BAI review of RTE and its funding is coming at a crucial point. Lots of people want a slice of your public funding or want you to stop taking commercial revenue. Are you at all nervous about what this report will say?
I think anyone would have to be concerned. You know, I think it's a substantial review. You know, like I think some people out there seem to think there is this going to be this, if we introduce a media charge, this mammoth amount of new public funding that the world and its mother should all get a slice of. There won't be. But there will, if the media charge is introduced properly and works properly, be additional public funding. We're a flawed organisation, all of that. I will accept the mistakes we've made. But I will say that there's a lot that we do right. And there's a lot that we only do and that only us can do. People would miss that if it isn't there, and if RT is pushed in a direction where it can no longer afford to do that. And that as part of this review, people need to stand back from that and they need to say, what do we want out of broadcasting? And I've said that we're prepared to stand back and look cold and hard at ourselves. There are huge problems and huge challenges facing the media industry and facing RTE, and technology is changing, audience habits are changing, and it is very easy, particularly if you're a public organisation. Every move you make is so public. The difficulty with that is you can become very narrowly focused on what are we on the front pages of the papers for today? What do we need to solve today? And obviously you need to address whatever that is and address whatever the problem is today. But we can't think that this industry is just going to stop and wait until we get through the latest crisis. So in terms of the actual finances, we have taken a huge amount of remedial action. We have faced a massive, massive downturn in commercial income over the last 4 years. We've also had our public funding cut, both directly and indirectly, directly through the budget and the money allocated to TG Cahir, and more indirectly through the capping on social welfare. We've taken 100 million in costs out in the last 4 years. By the end of this year, we will have 500 less people. We've tried to protect output as much as we can, but we've tried to prioritise that while also spending money. And this is the difficult sell, to start cutting in one part of the organisation and then investing in digital. And everyone says, well, digital aren't making a return yet. Why are we investing? That's an investment in the future. Nobody in the media sector is out of the woods in terms of where the market is at and what may happen in that market. We are in a much better place than we were a couple of years ago. But that market is a very volatile market, and I don't think anyone can totally predict where that market's going to go.
Because I think advertising revenue is down by something like 79 million since 2007, 39%. No sign of that picking up anytime soon.
I don't think there is a sign of it picking up soon. I think most of us in the media sector would settle for it bottoming out, frankly. You know, I don't think any of us are forecasting some massive growth, and I think we've all had to make adjustments. I think one of the hardest things is forecasting at the moment, because people are making last-minute decisions in terms of spend, both consumers and companies.
Now, you have an advantage over other players in the field in that you have access to public funds as well. I know you said you're open to discuss a balance between public and commercial funding so long as the dual model survives. You know, David McRedmond in TV3 feels you should leave the commercial revenue entirely to the commercial sector.
TV3 are a commercial company and they want more of the market. That's fine, but one commercial television company shouldn't determine government policy and shouldn't determine broadcasting policy. People see RTE as the big player in this market. We're not. You know, compared to Sky, compared to Google, compared to the range of other companies that are now in the Irish market, RTE is no longer that big dominant player. All Irish media companies are struggling. You know, those big international companies are not struggling. Ireland needs, in my view, a national broadcaster of scale that can compete in that market and that can compete and invest in home production and do the things that others won't do, because ultimately none of those big companies, none of them, are investing in Irish production to any degree. They never have. So how do you preserve that Indigenous culture? How do you preserve that range of coverage of Indigenous events? And for me, you need a broadcaster of scale in terms of where the market's going. And that broadcaster has to be regulated. That broadcaster, if they're going to get public funding, have to explain what they're going to do with it. They have to be challenged, all of that. But you either want it or you don't. And the way the market's going, 5, 7, 10 years' time, you won't have it. If RTE keeps having its public funding eroded, and it does, it won't be able to do the unique things that it does. And it will be pushed more and more down a commercial route. And that's not a route I want to see RTE go down. And like, RTE is dual funded, the market couldn't sustain a single licence fee. We're not looking for a free lunch here. Like RTE is saying, if you want this, and it's not our choice, it's going to be somebody else's choice. If you want this, and if you are prepared to see public funding increase, that we're prepared to look at the other things we do. And, you know, I think the idea of RTE in the middle of the worst recession in history, just coming out and saying, yeah, we want more public funding, please. Yeah, thanks. You know, that's not what we're saying. We're saying we will work in terms of how we earn it. We will show why we should get it. We will explain where it will go. And we are prepared to look at those other things, but only if the overall proposition is not undermined. People need to realise in terms of, and I would make this argument on commercial radio as well, that if you start diverting funding away from RTE to commercial companies that make commercial decisions, those decisions can change. They can change direction. What are you going to say to them if they come to you and they say, we need to go in a different direction or we're about to go bust? Just because a commercial entity makes a decision to do a type of programming now does not mean that they will be doing that program in a year or two. RTE will be doing the types of programming that we do now if we continue to get public funding, because we have a whole different regulatory system. We have to make annual commitments. We have to be judged on those commitments. And that's another difference, I think, that people need to realise.
The minister has ruled out any increase in the licence fee when it becomes the broadcasting charge. Now, that PricewaterhouseCoopers report that you commissioned did suggest that the licence fee is pretty low comparative to household spending.
It's quite obvious from PwC that it is low. If you look at the range of public funding from the licence fee directly, there is 220 million. RTE gets about 182 million of that. You add in there, there's evasion rates, there's collection rates, there's sound and vision fund allocations. There is the licence fee element that goes to TG Cahir. There is the programming an hour a day that RTE supplies to TG Cahir. And if you put all of those together, if you take the amount of money that is spent on public funding, plus what is currently being evaded by people breaking the law and not paying for the licence fee when others are, you're probably up closer to 286, 290 million, of which RTE gets 180. There is a set of resources out there, and that there is an opportunity through the BAI process and then whatever decisions are made out of that to have a look at that overall funding and how it is allocated. And it is about more than just RTE, and it is about more than just a licence fee increase.
Now, when Matt Dempsey of the NNI was in with us recently, he was talking about the move to paywalls. The Indo and the Times are going to introduce them later in the year. And he was making the point that RTE is in a very privileged position with regard to its revenue. You don't have to charge for online content. If you don't, you are putting these commercial operators, the newspapers, at a huge disadvantage and using public funds to do so.
People access newspaper sites for different things to the reasons they access RTE. We don't have columnists. We don't have opinion pieces. People are accessing us for a whole range of different things. And also people do pay. People pay for RTE content. They pay a licence fee. So the idea that we are some free organisation that just takes a direct state grant, people pay their licence fee. And we're all changing in this environment. Newspapers and RTE offer different things. Some of them are the same, but they do offer different things. And we all need to rethink this space.
Now, you've said that you will be charging for online content to overseas users. Do you not have a mandate in RTE to serve the diaspora?
We have a mandate in terms of providing a range of content to the diaspora, which we will continue to do. We're looking at entering the freemium space in that regard, not the paywall space. We're looking at offering premium packages, and we haven't worked through the detail of it. We currently have about four different ways to go, and it's all about what you offer and what the price point is. But we have done the research internationally, and we have a very large international audience, and they are open to this idea. But we're not putting up a general paywall. There are a number of things holding back all companies, and I think one of them is the advertising industry's attitude to particularly mobile. They're just very conservative on mobile, and RTE's page impressions, the majority of them, as and from the end of last year, are now being generated on mobile. And I think that's something that as an industry, as a media industry, we need to address, and we need to get out there together. There was a creative problem. There is a measurement problem, which as an industry we need to get together and say, how do we solve this measurement problem? Because we'll never get advertisers interested if we don't solve that. And then there is a pay problem. people want everything for free. And I think we're all looking at that at different ways. We already charge people in Ireland through a licence fee, so we have to look at it differently. So we are looking internationally. For me, they're the three issues. And the interesting thing about it is, despite the fact that we're all at each other's throats, understandably, and we're all defending our corner, there's at least two of those three issues that we all have a common cause on and that we're currently not working together on.
How would you address that?
You know, media is a funny thing in Ireland. You know, this tiny community who just kind of are obsessed with each other. You know, we actually don't talk to each other on a lot of this business stuff that often. I've tried to go out, I've tried to talk to the newspapers. We've made the free content offer to the NNI. We've done a deal with independent newspapers on our online content, on some of our video content. And I think maybe it's up to two or three of us to take a leadership role on these issues and say measurement and other issues like that are issues we all face. And maybe that's a way forward.
And finally, can I ask you about your own ambitions for RTE? Where do you see the station in 5 years' time?
I think the next 6 months will determine part of that in terms of the decisions that are made, and I'm not party to those decisions. I know where I want RTE to be. I would like RTE to be a public service broadcaster that can provide a range of programming in mixed genres, that can engage with people, that has a universal access, that has independence, that is trusted, that offers value for money, accountability, but also offers things that nobody else does. But if you're not offering something that nobody else does, then you shouldn't be getting public funding. And that's why I'm in public service broadcasting. That's why I love the concept of, for all of its flaws, what public service broadcasting should be about.
And that was Noel Curran, Director General of RTE there. And remember, you can hear the full version of all our interviews online. The Sunday Independent is the biggest selling newspaper in the country, and for almost three decades, Anne Harris has been a key part of its success. She joined the Sindo, as it's known, in 1985 as features editor and was deputy editor for 20 years before taking over as editor 18 months ago, following the death of Angus Fanning, who was also her husband. She and Claire Grady in the Herald are the only two women editors of national newspapers. Anne Harris has herself been in the headlines in recent times over her newspaper's coverage of one of the news group's shareholders, Dennis O'Brien. And before we get to that, what makes a good editor?
You only learn how to be a good editor by working for good editors. And I was very lucky. I worked for three amazing editors. I worked for Tim Pat Coogan, who had the most amazing energy and enthusiasm and was very young when he became editor. I worked for Claire Boylan, who was editor of Image, and she was an absolutely amazing woman. Claire had this vision of what she wanted in her magazine each month. And she set about getting that through commissioning, and she made an art of commissioning, and she was never happy until that happened. I learned commissioning from her. And then finally, Angus Fanning was a great editor. And what he had, apart from a lot of experience, because his family were in newspapers, he had huge empathy with people. And that's a huge and important quality in an editor. So I would see experience and empathy and energy as terribly important qualities in an editor.
The Sunday Independent is the biggest selling newspaper in the country, sales of 236,000 every week. Now, I know, like every other paper, sales are down, but still, what's the secret of your success?
Because of online, no newspaper is actually gaining in circulation, but the Sunday Independent is gaining in market share all the time. And the reason for that is that we are trying to reflect Irish society. We are really trying to get out there, listen to people's voices, hear what's worrying them, so that it's obviously touching something, some nerve in the kind of national psyche or mood at the moment. And I think that nerve is that whether they like it or they don't like it, because a lot of people don't like it, but they feel that it's actually talking their talk and reflecting their anxieties.
And what would you say to people who will say, well, I don't recognise that reflective, conscientious Sunday Independent. It's a rag that makes celebrities out of non-entities and out of its journalists and pursues its own agendas?
Well, I would say that, first of all, they're perfectly entitled to their point of view, and I'm delighted with that. I can't see how they could say we just pursue our own agenda, since week in, week out, we publish contradictory opinion, we publish masses of opinion, it's free, and it's all over the place. Somebody once described it as anarchic. So I think what you're seeing is people reading the opinion they don't agree with and saying, I absolutely hate it, because the one thing that seems to be common to all of them is they're reading it. and reacting to it. And that's what a newspaper should be doing. It should be in dialogue with its society. The new journalism, which came in decades ago, as you well know, Brenda, tended to put the journalist at the centre of the story. Now, myself personally, I'm not really in favour of that. But there are journalists that the public likes to read, and they go after them, and they want to read their Brenda Power column, and they want to read their Miriam Lord. So if you call that celebrity journalism, fair enough. It's nice to be sought after. The people who say, oh, I hate the Sunday Independent, it's very often code for I hate the fact that they have a gossip column. The Sunday Independent, we have never invaded privacy in them. We pick up the phone, we ask questions, we go out to the launches, the nightclubs, but we've never used surveillance. We've never used long lenses. We certainly have never phone hacked. And the worst we do is pick up the phone, ask. We hardly doorstep. We don't doorstep. Obviously, for some serious matters of public interest, you have to doorstep. But certainly on the lighter, gossipier ones, we certainly wouldn't. And we pick up the phone, ask the question, and that's that.
Now, I know INM has just advertised for a new editor-in-chief. Will you go for that?
I'm not sure. I haven't given it a lot of thought yet.
How will that affect you if you don't?
But see, that's the big question. How will that affect me? I don't know that either. There's no job specification advertised with the job. Now, normally jobs do include a job specification. There hasn't been one. So I wouldn't want to sort of anticipate what that is. But I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
Now, INM's major shareholder, Dennis O'Brien, is of the view that you have an agenda against him. You have a campaign against him. Is this true?
Shortly after I took over as editor, three things happened in very quick succession. One was the New York Stock Exchange, where Dennis O'Brien had appeared on the platform ringing the bell on St. Patrick's Day alongside Enda Kenny. In less than a year earlier, adverse findings had been made about Dennis O'Brien by the Moriarty Tribunal, and the optics of that certainly didn't look very good for the Taoiseach, who was also just a year in office around about then. Now, we weren't the first people to criticise that, by the way, I hasten to say. The first criticism was on prime time, and I think the Irish Times moved in before we ever did on the Sunday. But as you know, the Sunday Independent has a lot of commentators who are more than keen to comment on things, and they had come in with their various opinions. So that happened. The next thing that happened was the Mahon Tribunal reported on the anniversary, basically, of the Moriarty Tribunal. So that sparked, in all media again, an awful lot of comment about the Moriarty, about the fact that both Michael Lowry and Dennis O'Brien had said when the Moriarty was published that they would be challenging it, so people remembered they hadn't challenged it. People went back to those findings. People made all sorts of comparisons between the two tribunals, like, for example, Mr. Justice Moriarty only used the word corrupt a couple of times, whereas Mahon used it liberally. And again, a lot more comment. And finally, Gavin O'Reilly resigned in April. So in the space of a month, three quite seismic events happened, which caused an awful lot of comment. And as you know, the Sunday Independent is noted for its opinion. And so there was a lot of it. I absolutely wouldn't deny it. But I think it was all justified. I don't think there was any one word of it that wasn't sincerely held. And then there was, thereafter that, the whole question of the future of INM. James Osborne was ousted as chairman of INM in June. Now, I have to say something here that a lot of people forget. Dennis O'Brien may be the major shareholder, but he is a minority shareholder. So he doesn't control INM. And he doesn't control the board because there's shareholders out there. And so we can't be consulting the register of shareholders to see who we please or displease every time we write an article. So the fact of the matter and the code by which I practice my job as editor is that Dennis O'Brien does not control INM.
And tell me about this new INM charter then.
This charter is, first of all, a proposed charter. I'm bound by confidentiality on it. But however, there was one section of it which was leaked to the Irish Times and not by me, I hasten to add. And it certainly had a very worrying premise. And I suppose a lot of people thought that this indicated the influence of the new board. I'm not saying they authored it. I don't know who authored it, actually. I haven't been able to find out. But this section 7, which says that comment or sustained, repeated and adversarial comment about any person or individual has to have the written consent of the managing editor was extremely disturbing because, of course, he's absolutely removed the basic function of an editor and arrogated it to the managing editor. Now, it doesn't hold water in many respects because, as you know, if a newspaper is in contempt, the person who goes to jail is the editor. So you cannot have a situation where one person actually takes all the responsibility and all the blame, but the thing has been signed off by another person. However, in most newspapers, the managing editor does not outrank the editor. So I think that that particular section of the charter might have fallen on that hurdle. And indeed, it might explain the reason for the new focus on an editor-in-chief.
But I suppose it is a commercial reality. Dennis O'Brien is running a business. It's not a charity. Its objective is to make profit. Would it be logical of him not to want the organisation, of which he has a level of control, to be attacking his business interests, to be attacking him as a businessman?
I don't know that we're attacking his business interests.
The Lowry transcripts that you ran in February, because of the connection with Dennis O'Brien, might be seen to be part of maybe a sustained and repeated attack.
Oh, they might, without a shadow of a doubt. They might be seen as repeated, adversarial and sustained. But they were nonetheless absolutely in the public interest. And the Press Council Charter is quite clear that public interest trumps everything, including privacy. The Lowry tapes were very important for this reason, that the Moriarty Tribunal found that the minister, Michael Lowry, the then minister, Michael Lowry, interfered in the process of awarding the second mobile phone licence, the biggest procurement licence the state had ever had in its gift to give, that he had interfered in that process to the benefit of Dennis O'Brien. The Moriarty Tribunal was unable to say certain things conclusively. The value of those Lowry tapes was they showed some of the stuff that was withheld from the tribunal. Other commentators outside of the Sunday Independent, indeed, very respected ones, certainly agreed that some of the jigsaw puzzle pieces were provided and answered by the Lowry tapes.
And what about your own future in the Sunday Independent?
Well, I have a contract that runs till the end of 2014. All I want is to see it out and to keep working in the Sunday Independent because I love it. I have the most amazing team. Angus died, as you know, and that's very sad. But we also have great contributors. We have the most amazing, dedicated, committed, loyal contributors who give all those fantastically contrarian opinions week in, week out and exasperate the reader that you said hates the Sunday Independent but actually reads it. And as long as they read it, long may they disagree with it, because this is democracy. This is what matters.
Anne Harris of the Sunday Independent there. You're listening to The Media Show. I'm Brenda Power. And next week, why France is looking to tax smartphones, Claire Dignan on why she's leaving RTE.
She's just done an extraordinary job and has been one of those figures in broadcasting who has actually had an influence.
And remember, you can contact us on mediashow@rte.ie and join the conversation on Twitter, #RTEMediaShow.